From that lit site in QPLR Public Access Boston, it's Shootin' It. One podcast recorded week by week. I'm Liberal White Lady. For the last 2 weeks, I've spent every working day trying to figure out what really happened on the set of the Shootin' It Halloween special, aired November 7th, 2014. Author and director Jamie Corrales and poet Kendress Dorsley recorded a 28-minute live-action special that would prove to be their last. At the conclusion of the 76th episode of the long-running podcast Shootin' It, Jamie announced that he had poisoned the drinks they'd consumed that night and sold their bodies into the snuff market.
I have sold our bodies into snuff. Do you know what snuff is?
Snuff films where we wear costumes and they do sexual activities with us.
That's not really what a snuff film is, but you're kind of close. A snuff film is when someone's murdered on camera, and that video is then uploaded to the internet or sold, and people watch that for whatever purpose they may have.
However, new evidence has emerged that Jamie did not, in fact, poison the drinks, and that it was merely coincidental that the duo died as a result of cyanide poisoning. In this phone call recorded October 29th, just 2 days before the special was filmed, Jamie and Kenny discussed the planned ending for the episode.
So what are you thinking?
Well, if we had like a live studio audience, we could do what Eminem did in Encore and just like shoot everybody up and then at the end just shoot ourselves. That could be something. Pretty gruesome, right?
Yeah, that would be, you know, that'd be cool, but that would also make our budget a lot higher. I'm pretty sure that would cost a lot of money to get all those fake guns and the, I don't know. That just seems like a lot of work. So why don't we, you know, I like the idea about death being involved, though. So why don't we, like, figure out a way to kill off ourselves? Maybe you pull out a gun and, like, blow my head off at the end of it, and we'll do, like, CGI or some shit.
And I'd kill myself, too, right?
Yeah, you'll be guilt-ridden and then kill yourself.
I could see that. But, I don't know. I think guns nowadays are kind of, like, overplayed, though, with, like, rappers talking about, like, how they'll pop one off and shit like that, and all these, like, school shootings and, like, I don't know. We got to do something, like, old school.
That isn't a bad idea. And you're right. Guns are totally overplayed. All right. And, you know, the CGI could be quite expensive, too. We could do knives. I do have, like, a retractable knife, but that's kind of, I don't know. I think that's busted, actually, to be honest with you. I don't know. We could always just go, like, the poison route. Because then you can't really... It's just you're faking your death. You collapse, and then that's a wrap.
Yeah, that actually might work. You know, poison, quick, painless. And, like, everybody be all like, oh, my goodness, how'd they go? Nobody knows until they get the coroner to check up on our bodies and shit.
Should we actually hire people to play the coroners, or... Should we just like leave that to the imaginations of the listeners?
It's just leave it to the imagination. You could like probably write it off as like a spinoff or like...
A spinoff like, starring the coroners?
Yeah, the coroners come in and they identify what's going on with the bodies and stuff. And then like, I don't know, we could have like Mike and Dylan play the coroners. They fly down from their areas and then they... come coroner our bodies. I don't even know if that's a real word, though.
Well, they perform autopsies.
Oh, there you go. Autopsy our bodies.
Yeah, there we go. I like this idea.
I'd rather have Mike do it than Dylan just because, like, Dylan's still a little young.
Really?
You know what I mean?
No, look, I would 10 out of 10 times prefer Dylan to perform an autopsy on me over Mike. Mike is just, you know, he picks his nose a lot. He farts quite a bit. I don't want Malkovich boogers in my spleen.
As long as, like, we don't have any necromancing freaking coroners, dog, I'm good, dude. I don't need anybody defiling my body while I'm dead.
Here's audio from the night of that podcast as featured on the Halloween special.
Do I look hip? Do I look nice? Surfer bro? Well, it seems to have kicked in. He had significantly more alcohol than I have.
What plays out as a drunkenly performed and poorly put together skit was actually, in fact, a homicide. The question that still lingers, however, is if Jamie wasn't the perpetrator, then who was? In the 2 years since Shootin' It began, Jamie and Kenny had both made a number of enemies. For many viewers, the name that comes to mind first is that of Gary Miller, also known as the Gare Bear. In the now infamous lost episode of Shootin' It, episode 70, Gary made an appearance and was continually asked if he was a 9/11 conspiracist.
He's on some incognito type shit, bro. He's probably on his way up to Massachusetts right now.
Yeah, he's got that shotgun in the back seat. He's on his way up to Mass.
Gary lost his temper quickly, and the following incident ensued.
9/11, was it a conspiracy?
No.
But this contradicts what you said earlier.
I did not say it was.
But you said yeah.
Yeah, to what?
That 9/11 was a conspiracy. That was your opinion.
I did not. Yeah. Yeah is an opinion. Yeah.
I asked, was 9/11 a conspiracy? You said, yeah.
God damn it. You know, I bet you have no idea how bad I want to fucking punch you in the face right now.
Could Gary be the culprit? Let's take a look at his story. Gary Gabriel Miller was born October 1st, 1990. He came to know the two victims in the spring of 2003 when the trio were in middle school together. 2 years later, Gary would move to Florida, away from the Shootin' It hosts, but he would still remain in touch with both Jamie and Kenny. Seeing as Gary was, and reportedly still is, living in St. Cloud, Florida, it would be unlikely that the guerrilla-esque Hitler Youth could have perpetrated the crimes committed that fateful day. However, more than 2 weeks had passed between the recordings of the two episodes. In episode 70, Gary can be heard driving a vehicle while talking to the two hosts. Is it possible that Gary drove all the way to Massachusetts to kill the duo? Gary vehemently denies that he had any involvement in the deaths of Jamie or Kenny. However, recent cell phone records have shown that outgoing calls, including the call recorded during the lost episode, had taken place outside of the St. Cloud area. When we reached out to Gary Miller to gauge his thoughts on the deaths of his two longtime friends turned enemies, he declined to comment. While that certainly does not make Gary automatically guilty of murder, it is definitely a red flag and something to keep in mind. After the recorded conversation between Jamie and Kenny surfaced, an investigation began. Police searched the homes of Shootin' It correspondents Mike Malkovich, Dylan Fuster, Jack Vieira, Brandy Martinez, and Hans Lam Barboza, collectively known as the Degenerates. Fuster, Vieira, Martinez, and Barboza came up clean, but what was found on the laptop of Mike Malkovich would shock the detectives.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Shootin' It. This is Mike Malkovich. This is my show. This is no longer Jamie's show. Kenny's no longer on here because he's busy with child. He's not pregnant with child. His lady has with child. And Jamie's just busy with other endeavors. And he's really pale. He doesn't really get out much. And he likes Dunkin' Donuts, which is really stupid because their coffee kind of sucks. Well, it doesn't kind of suck. It sucks. But yeah, this is my show now. Mike Malkovich, hi. So let's get started. Hello and welcome to another episode of Shootin' It. My name is Mike Malkovich. Jamie is not here. Kenny is not here. They no longer want to do this. This is my show. They're bags of shit. I win. This is mine now. Let's get the show started. Welcome to another episode of Shootin' It. My name is Mike Malkovich. The show used to be hosted prior by Jamie K and Kenny D. They are no longer with us. And Shootin' It is now in my hands to just kill off as a show.
The clip is dated as having been recorded on October 28th, only 3 days before the deaths of Jamie and Kenny. Police found two notebooks full of sketches and notes regarding ideas for a solo podcast entitled Shootin' It with Mike Malkovich. In the second notebook, Malkovich wrote, quote, I'm thinking about who would be the best co-host for me right now. Brandy's a cunt, Jack has his own show, and old Manny Magoo is too busy writing for Hannibal Buress. Looks like Dylan is my only option. It puzzled me why the police wouldn't take the time to question Dylan and see if he may know anything about the homicides. Dylan was a distant friend of both of the victims, as well as the suspect Mike Malkovich, and yet, not a single question was asked, so I took it upon myself to call up Dylan and see if he knew anything. Did you know Mike was grooming you to be the co-host of his podcast?
I wouldn't say grooming me, but he always talked about wanting to branch out.
Did Mike ever mention wanting to do bodily harm to Jamie or Kenny?
Not specifically, but he was just always acted like a weird guy. He might say some weird things here or there. I never really took it seriously, and I don't think maybe, you know, he could have. Oftentimes, he always talked about wanting to kill my dogs, which, you know, didn't realize he could maybe possibly do it to humans, but I guess, you know, he might do that.
A couple of things struck me as odd about my conversation with Dylan, most notably his uneasiness during the discussion. It sounded as if Dylan may have actually known more than he let on and simply didn't want to incriminate himself. When I spoke to Detective Arnold Flass, who handled the case, he admitted to me that Mike's testimony was mostly solid, that it was near impossible for Mike to have been in Massachusetts at any point leading up to the murders, and that perhaps the audio samples recovered were merely a product of coincidence. However, that would be quite a timely coincidence. Let's take a look at Mike's backstory. Mike Malkievich, also known as Michael Torsedag, was born in Copenhagen, Denmark to two Polish immigrants sometime during the winter of 1994. Mike, a stand-up comic, co-hosted Shootin' It for over 35 episodes following Kenny's departure. When Kenny returned to the show, Mike seemingly disappeared voluntarily. In this clip from a past episode of Shootin' It, Jamie claims that his former co-host was in rehab.
Now, is that because you hate Kenny?
What?
I told him you were in rehab, so...
Oh, good.
Remarkably, no records show signs of a Mike Malkievich or Michael Torsedag having taken up residency in any facility in the Atlantic City area. Many suspect that Jamie's reasoning on the show may be a cover story to a much darker truth. A September 27th entry on Jamie's private blog seems to confirm that. In the entry, Jamie wrote, "Mike is acting like a prick about the whole Kenny returning to the show thing, and I don't know what to do about it. Part of me just wants to say to him, man up, but I don't want to deal with another sobbing incident like the one on the set of Practice Makes Perfect." Judging by the entry, it appears that a conflict had arisen between Mike and Kenny, potentially over who deserved the main co-host spot of Shootin' It More. The part that piqued my curiosity most, though, was this alleged sobbing incident on the set of Jamie's movie Practice Makes Perfect. In the movie, Mike plays a summer school teacher named Paul Brockovich who both hates his life and his job. The film, currently scheduled for a summer 2015 release, may face setbacks due to the recent deaths of director Jamie Corrales and co-star Kenny Dorsley. I met with one of the film's production assistants who requested anonymity to see if I could get some details on this particular incident involving Mike.
If I am to speak truthfully, Jamie acted like a complete monster on set, barking orders at the crew. It was very uncomfortable, consistently. You know, at one point, he and Mike almost came to blows. He burned Mike's eyelashes with a lit cigarette and spat in his eye. It was horrible. We were 5 minutes away from shooting, and he did this, and needless to say, the shoot did not go very well. Just ask LeVar Burton. He'll tell you anything.
After the interviewer reached out to actor LeVar Burton, best known for his roles in the television series Roots and Star Trek The Next Generation, when asked about his thoughts regarding Jamie as both a director and a human being, LeVar, who plays Principal Healy in the film, simply responded, "Fuck that guy," and hung up the phone. It's become evident to me over the past couple of days that Jamie had formed a number of enemies. It's entirely possible that whoever did this did it to kill Jamie and that Kenny was merely an innocent bystander. If that was the case, though, then why go to the trouble of poisoning all of the beverages, including Kenny's? The culprit had to have had precise timing and a knowledge of the layout of the Shootin' It studio in Jamie's apartment. Along with the New England-based metal band The Handsome Bastards, who were playing a show in Rhode Island that night, the only other guests to have been in studio had sturdy alibis for where they were the night of the murders. That leaves only a handful of plausible suspects. Now, we've covered the two leading suspects in the case, Gary Gerber Miller and Mike Malkievich, but what about a mysterious third suspect? One that had slipped below the radar and away from the attention of police and investigators. That suspect I'm talking about is David Adkins, better known by his stage name Sinbad.
And see, there are people, anybody here like a vegetarian against killing animals? I mean, like, yeah, because I know this is Michigan, you don't probably have but one or two. See, California. The poor animal, you can't kill the animal. We eat vegetables. God made it so if you can't run fast, you get killed.
In this never-before-heard interview with the Jingle All the Way star, Jamie talks to the comedic icon about his career and life on the road.
Hello?
Welcome to Shootin' It, Sinbad. How's it going?
Hey, I'm good, man.
Glad to hear it. I'm glad to have you on the show tonight. So why don't we get right into things? What's new with you? What have you been up to? You kind of disappeared for a while.
I never left it. People just found me again, dude. I've been on the road ever since 85. Never, I mean, 83. Well, no. People kept saying to me, where you been? And my thing was, well, where y'all been?
Oh, you Sinbad.
I think because I did so much TV and so many movies that when they didn't see me on TV anymore, they didn't realize, you know, you don't go away. You're still working.
Yeah, and you were on Top Chef for a while. Yep. Now, you didn't win the show, but I'm sure you did fairly well. Is that a yes or a no? Because I have no...
You know what? It worked. It's funny. Because I think what it was, because there was so much time in between. Usually you're doing a different comedy special every couple, 3 years.
Yeah.
That people, I got older. I'm 53 years old. And what I talk about, last time people saw me was 12 years ago, 13 years ago. I was talking about my kids when they were young.
Yeah, but I'm talking...
Now I got a 24-year-old daughter and I have my son's 21. So what happens is you're talking about life in a whole different place.
I was talking about Top Chef.
Well, you're a creative person. Actually, because when I keep the studio... So what happens is with the studio, everything at the house, my son is doing music and he's doing film and going to school for computer programming. So they're still always at the house and doing their thing. No more closet. I'm out the closet.
The interview, recorded in March of 2014, was pulled from the Shootin' It schedule at the request of Mr. Adkins. It was reported that Mr. Adkins was not satisfied with the interview and claimed that the host, Jamie, had painted him in an unfair light. A source, who wished to remain nameless, informed me that Jamie initially refused to pull the audio and only did so after being threatened several times by a representative of Mr. Adkins. Could Sinbad be the culprit? Given his relationship with the now infamous Bill Cosby, it wouldn't be shocking to see another comic's dark side revealed. Sinbad was performing in Boston around the time of the murders, but with a show lined up at 7 p.m. and the crime having taken place between the hours of 9:30 and 10 p.m. 20 miles away, that would leave a limited window of opportunity for the Benton Harbor comic to have committed the homicides. And that's also assuming that Sinbad knew where the duo were recording. In an email sent to the comic in January 2014, Jamie flatters the comedian, naming him as one of his childhood idols, and also provides an address to the Shootin' It studio for an interview to promote an upcoming gig. Sinbad responded, quote, "Yo, my dude, that sounds great, but I'm not going to have any free time before my show in March. I'm doing another show in Boston around late October if you want to wait. Otherwise, we can do it over the phone." Jamie replied back, quote, "Sounds good to me, Mr. Sinbad. Let's do it." The two exchanged numbers and the rest was history. But speaking realistically, would an accomplished icon like Sinbad really go out of his way to kill the Shootin' It hosts even after the audio had been pulled?
Are you out your mind?
At first, I thought it was far-fetched and nonsensical, but then a startling factoid fell into my lap. Of the 427 radio talk shows and podcasts that Sinbad has been a guest on, over 190 of the show's hosts have died untimely deaths related to heart problems and food poisoning. One anonymous host who suffered kidney failure not long after interviewing the comic was quoted as saying, "He's a maniac, a complete fucking lunatic. There's nothing sane about Sinbad except the persona he puts forth. And I'm not saying that as a compliment. I watched him masturbate with a cat carcass in the back alley behind our studio." Another anonymous radio host who did not suffer any bodily injuries or organ failure said, quote, "Sinbad is incredibly difficult to work with. Prior to the show starting, he had an unusual list of demands, and his PR guy basically handed us a list of questions we could ask." They went on to say, quote, "A friend of mine once veered off the script Sinbad had given him. Sinbad continued to answer the questions that were on the sheet, even though he was being asked a completely different set of questions. The show sounded nonsensical, like he was on drugs or something. 4 months later, my friend wound up in the hospital as a result of a heart attack. He's been in a coma on life support ever since." Regardless of whether or not Jamie and Kenny are the latest to have fallen in line with this bizarre string of deaths, or if their passings were merely coincidental, it's certainly something to take note of and thus propels Sinbad to the top of my list of suspects. The fact that Sinbad is the only one of the three to have been concretely placed in Boston around the time of the murders is not to be ignored. Along with his power, wealth, and the capability of transportation, Sinbad should 100% be considered the leading suspect in this case. One thing does have me puzzled, though. If Sinbad were to arrive at the Corrales residence and infiltrate the Shootin' It studio, why didn't anyone notice him? An A-list actor and comedian like Sinbad typically can't walk 10 feet without being approached for an autograph or picture. Yet, outside of the comedy club he was performing at, nobody saw him in the area. It's no secret that Sinbad has fallen on hard times as of recent. As of 2012, the comedian was reportedly $11 million in debt and had to reduce his staff to his son and brother-in-law, both of whom had been reportedly hammering back drinks all night at the Chuckle Hut. If Sinbad were to have killed the duo, it's unlikely he'd have the funds to hire an outside source to break into the studio and poison the drinks. He'd have to have done it himself. As odd as the image of a national treasure like Sinbad sneaking into the homes of over 100 radio show hosts may seem, it's not out of line with the description of him having masturbated with a cat. But there is one other possibility, one that has kept me up some nights when thinking about this case, and that's that there may have been multiple killers. Maybe our culprit, or culprits, had taken a cue from Wes Craven's Scream and teamed up to strike revenge on both Jamie and Kenny. Could a stand-up comic bond have united Sinbad and Mike Malkovich to murder the duo? The answer is no. Having peered through Mike's Tumblr archive, there are a number of blog posts written by Malkovich that show a passionate hatred for the comic. One post, dated as having been written August 22, 2012, reads, quote, "That two-bit fucking hack Sinbad bumped me at the boneyard last night. I hope somebody keys his limousine." Given the vitriol Mike has for Sinbad, that would leave only one other plausible suspect, Gary. As we already covered, Gary's calls had been picked up as outside of the St. Cloud area. He'd also made embarrassing appearances on Shootin' It in the past, most notably during the time that Jamie had requested an interview with a comedian. It's entirely plausible that Sinbad dug into Jamie and Kenny's history to see who they'd made enemies with and hired the disgruntled guest to off the duo. So plausible, in fact, that it's exactly what happened. Less than 20 minutes ago, the Boston Police Department released the following statement. Florida native Gary Miller and famed stand-up comedian David Sinbad Adkins have been placed into custody as suspects for the murders of Jamie Carellis and Ken Duress Dorsley. No further information is available at this time. So there you have it, folks. Another mystery solved. Tune in next time as I re-examine the case of the Zodiac and suspect Arthur Lee Allen's involvement in the murders. I've been your host, Liberal White Lady. More next week.